to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, your regular host for the show and founder of the UK registered charity Yes to Life, which for more than a decade has helped people with cancer to access integrative medicine. Last week I had promised you a programme about exercise and cancer with specialist Lizzie Davis. The interview had to be postponed, but I'm pleased to say that Lizzie's available this week and I'm speaking to her over Skype about the many ways in which exercise can be a very important strand of an integrative programme for cancer. Hi Lizzie, thanks a lot for coming on the show today.
That's all right, thank you for having me, Robin.
Great, so you're a brilliant supporter of the charity, you've contributed to the Cancer Revolution, our book about integrative medicine. You've recently done an exercise workshop for us, part of one of our workshop programme. Brilliant. I want to start off by talking about you and your background, actually. I've heard that you were an oncology nurse. I wanted to hear what your experience was of being an oncology nurse, what it was like working on the wards, and then what brought on this decision to suddenly branch out on your own and go into exercise for cancer.
Okay, yes, of course. So I began my nursing career back in the very early 90s. And as you said, I went swiftly, very swiftly actually, into the field of oncology. So I studied at the Royal Marsden, I did my degree there. So I worked very much within acute care, within various departments. I worked in intensive care. And then I decided to shift my focus a little bit and I worked at UCH. And I acquired the role of clinical nurse specialist in palliative care there. And I worked for a number of years at UCH, both again in the clinical setting and also as a community nurse. I did some time in Camden and Islington as well. So in terms of what it was like, I mean, quite a few years ago now, Robin. the time passes so fast. I'm thinking, gosh, it's 2016. I'd like to think that things have developed and changed somewhat in terms of care and how patients are supported from diagnosis right through. But I still think that there's probably some room for improvement. I'm always still very surprised when I ask healthcare professionals about how much they inquire with their patients about movement and exercise. There's few hands that go up. Some do, but there's still quite a lot that don't. And in terms of my shift from nursing to what I do now, that very much came about after my mum, actually, Robin. I took some time out of my nursing career, A, to have my children, but also to care for my mum when she was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And I spent about 18 months looking after her until she unfortunately passed away. And it was really during that time that I remember thinking, gosh, there's just been nothing done to support her in terms of her keeping her functional capacity. Her disease was very advanced and there was very little they could do treatment-wise, but there was just nothing really left to bolster my mum during this period. Nothing about nutrition, nothing about movement, not a huge amount even around kind of emotional support and care and having sort of health-related quality of life towards the very end stages of her life. And it really made me, I think kind of 6 months, a year after she passed away, to really rethink and reconsider that there actually is a really big, important nugget that's missing. And I think has been missing from the day of diagnosis right through to people living with advanced disease. But I'd like to also say that I think in the last, well, my mum's been gone nearly 12 years. In the last 12 years, there has been a slow shift, I'd like to say slow, but I do think things are starting to change because I think media now is starting to get across not only the importance of trying to prevent the onset of something like cancer, but there is now a slow trickling stream of evidence coming out from research to also support the importance and the value of movement, exercise, nutrition, all these other components throughout treatments. into survivorship. But obviously, I think what we want to try and talk about a little bit today is the importance of movement exercise for people who are still living with cancer. Still a bit of a grey area, I think.
Right. Yeah, I was going to ask what you thought about some of the news that's been on the last few days. There was some really quite new suggestions to doctors as to how to talk to their patients and how to deal with them, which come out recently. I wonder what you thought about those. Did you get to hear those?
Well, I know. I've been away, actually, so I'm probably going to have to feign a little bit of ignorance, but I've been away for the last 7 days, and I only returned late last night. So I'm catching up, but I did read something about, not to do with cancer, but about just the importance or how much value a GP, for instance, can have in terms of just talking to their patient about losing weight. Just highlighting it rather than just not addressing it. Just saying we need to think about how ways in which you can lose weight to improve your overall health. So you might need to fill me in on some things that I might have missed in the press the last week.
Well, that was one of them, you're right. But there was a little raft of other ones which included things like making the decisions about what treatment plan to follow with the patient, which was radical, I thought. And there was also being prepared to give the advice that some treatments are not really worth having, and chemotherapy was cited as an example, where it's not really going to necessarily prolong your life much and it's going to make it pretty bad.
Absolutely.
These are fairly, they're fairly big turnaround from the way things have been done in the past. And, really they were homing in on the kind of paternalistic, didactic, telling you what your treatment's going to be. Approach that's always been taken up to now, and saying, well, maybe we need to move on a bit, which I would certainly support that.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I know even when I just think back to my mum, there was this struggle with healthcare professionals to really have a conversation with my mum about the fact that her cancer was terminal, her time left was going to be very, very short. She was offered chemotherapy and there was very little that could have been done. And of course, that was offered and so she accepted it. And then really struggled with horrific symptoms for the last few months of her life, when actually there probably should have been, she might have benefited more from an open, more realistic conversation about quality of life. And really what little could be done in terms of treatment and giving her more time. So, so obviously some very interesting stuff that's come out in the last week.
Yeah. Okay, so look, on to exercise then. It is, as you say, increasingly being seen as an important part of a cancer programme, at least in some quarters. Just how important is it?
Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think it's been very much pushed and encouraged in terms of prevention. And there's been some lovely pieces of research and some lovely publications examining the benefits of physical activity for those who have been diagnosed, and those in the early stages, definitely, and into the survivorship process. But there's some more emerging evidence coming out about the importance of exercise for people who've got an advanced disease, so a kind of non-curative diagnosis. But it's been a little bit of a grey area in terms of the feasibility and the safety of prescribing exercise. So I will sit here and obviously say that I think it's incredibly beneficial to everybody, wherever you are in the cancer pathway, whether you're right at the beginning of your treatment or whether you're living with an advanced disease. So we all know that often when you've got an advanced cancer, it comes with often concurrent symptoms and what we call symptom clusters. So there could be a lot of things going on, ranging from nausea, insomnia, pain, fatigue. Obviously, we know fatigue is one of the most cited symptoms throughout cancer, whether it's treatment or even towards the end of life. So, and what's been really promising is lots of the studies, even though they're quite small, or the observations that have taken place, they have recognised that actually people who do engage in physical activity, and Robin, we're just talking about a few minutes throughout the day. We're not talking about big sections of your day. So even just kind of 5 minutes here, there, throughout the day, actually can lessen some of those side effects. Yeah. And it also means that you're trying to delay decline eventually, and improve and maintain someone's physical functioning, keeping up their stamina, keeping up their endurance, so that they can either continue to do all the daily activities of living, which we know are quite strenuous by nature, or for some people still doing some quite remarkable things. I mean, I'm working with quite a number of patients at the moment who've got secondaries or living, you know, with an advanced diagnosis, who are doing quite amazing things in terms of fitness and exercise. So, you know, it's very exciting to see these people living very well, actually.
Yeah, it's amazing stories.
Amazing. I mean, I have a gentleman who ran a 10K race a couple of weeks ago, and he probably wasn't far off what I would do it in. It's really, you know, it's wonderful, but obviously that's not for everybody. No. And so for many patients, it's about being able to have the confidence to keep doing their nice walk in the morning, or to make sure they can get up and down the stairs. They've got the strength to keep going up and down the stairs. You know, we know that getting in and out of the bath, getting in and out of chairs sometimes is quite strenuous. So it's being able to promote movement in a way that, you know, lessens the decline, keeps people functional, and that also helps to really significantly shift people from sickness towards health. I think, does that make sense?
Yes.
So, you know, trying to encourage people to keep moving, and it, you know, those happy hormones, they do get released when we move, when we exercise, when we breathe deeply. So, you know, that helps to lessen anxiety, lessen stress, worry, obviously helps you to sleep a little bit better. So there's lots of good reasons as to why we need to exercise. And I think they're just as applicable for patients who are still living with cancer as they are for people who are, you know, into the survivorship process.
Yeah, okay. So I don't know if you can give any indication, but at least your best guesstimate, what percentage of people with cancer could potentially be helped by exercise?
I believe everybody. I mean, even people who are, you know, people want to get out and run, you know, do the race that my lovely gentleman managed to do. But even, I mean, if you look at the hospice movement particularly, they have some amazing things now in their outpatient departments. Many hospices around the country are now have an exercise program, so you can go in and you can on an outpatient basis go in and follow their programs and classes that they do. So there's things to support people within a kind of class environment, a group environment, which again can be very, very supportive for patients. And I think also the other thing is making sure that whoever's leading your exercise, particularly for people who are very worried about what they should and shouldn't be doing, what is safe, what can I manage, what am I capable of doing? And I think those are the questions I get asked time and time and time again. I simply don't know what to do. I don't know what is safe. I don't know what I can do. So it's just making sure that if you are going to exercise, and there's quite a lot of things going on with your body, that you make sure that you seek the right support and the right advice and the right guidance. Someone who is ideally familiar with patients who have got cancer or are undergoing treatment. And so they're able to modify movement and exercise to make it safe and to make it doable. Because obviously we know that patients, the way they are can change from day to day. It really can vary how they feel, what the symptoms are, And, you know, really from day to day. So it's just making sure that it's something. I always like to say that you think of your exercise almost a bit like your medicine. So your movement is as important as your medicine. And the Marsden do talk about movement and exercise as a major treatment modality. And it's just about making sure that it's prescribed safely and that it gets dosed safely as well, so that you dose the movement that you do, you dose the exercise to make sure that it's giving you value, giving you something, you know, it's adding to your well-being and not subtracting from it.
Okay, well, look, we'll come back at the end of the show about how to find the right people to help you to do this stuff and to guide you in the right way, because you say that's really important. Macmillan, I think, have done a lot to bring the whole area to the public attention, probably, and also to the attention of the medics as well. I see you've got their report on your website. Presumably, they've stuck their neck out on this because there is actually a fairly decent amount of solid science behind the benefits of exercise. Could you maybe summarise their position on things and the kind of science that they've based this on?
The Move More report, gosh, when did that come out? I think it was 2010, 2011. I might have to put myself on a limb there. I think there was various bits and pieces that came out. There was some interesting research that was done by Cornea back in, 2007, 2008, and then various studies that followed that. And that very much looked at physical activity and cancer control framework, something called PAC, which people may or may not be familiar with. And that very much was research that looked at identifying specific cancer-related time periods about monitoring people with regards to physical activity. So that was looking at things like pre-diagnosis, so looking at prevention, and then looking at a screening process as well. So that was about around the area of detection, cancer detection, and then looking towards post-diagnosis as well, looking at treatment preparation and coping, and then into survivorship and then into rehabilitation. So I think there was, you know, a lot of these studies that came out of America, some stuff, I think Cornell was coming out of Canada. I think these were very much the backbone of where the Move More report came out and various other things that then have also come out of America as well. I mean, they're kind of a few years ahead of us in terms of all of this.
They are.
So a little bit on the trail of yes, absolutely, of what really has been happening in other parts of the world, kind of, you know, well ahead of us, really. So we are definitely playing some catch-up. In terms of a more integrative approach towards cancer for patients.
Yes.
So I think, the Move More was definitely, I think, the kind of one document that really has kind of paved the way forward for sure. And I think I agree with you. I think Macmillan definitely stuck their neck out, but I think definitely at the right time. And people, you know, there is a lot more enthusiasm now for it. And I think, you know, definitely when I work in various treatment centres in London, and there is now slowly more and more understanding of why we need to exercise. And also there's more an understanding of kind of all the things that are what actually happens inside when we exercise, and how this can be really effective for your cancer and also for your treatment, how your treatment can work as well. So there's lots more, some very interesting scientific stuff that's going on. Can I mention one particular place in Australia at the moment, actually?
Sure.
That the news this year, a treatment centre in Perth that are really, they're doing a study at the moment, which is very exciting, where they bring patients in for their treatment. So they'll come to the chemo suite and have the chemotherapy, or they'll be coming in for their radiotherapy. And at the same time as coming in and having that done, they book a gym session. and they come in and they have their treatment, and then they go straight to the physical activity centre, which is also within the treatment centre, and they'll go and do a half an hour exercise, prescribed exercise routine under the support and guidance of physical therapists. So they have their treatment and they have a cup of tea, and then they might get half an hour and then they go straight for treatment.
Right.
So very, very exciting. So this is a study that's well, it's been underway this year in Australia. So there's a very good link that you can actually go. There's a news report that was done on it in Australia. So you can kind of get a sense of how patients have been feeling going through this, and all really positive stories from those that are involved in the trial. In terms of symptoms being less, in terms of feeling they can do more, feeling more empowered, you know, that kind of feeling of self-efficacy that, gosh, I didn't think I'd be able to do that, and I can do that. And my nausea is settled, and I don't have so much pain, and my fatigue is better. And so it's been, you know, I think that's probably been the most exciting thing that I've seen in the press this year.
Right. So you just mentioned that there's been a growth in understanding of why exercise actually is so beneficial, the mechanisms by which it's helping with both the cancer and your general well-being. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Well, there's so many reasons why exercise and movement. I don't always like to use the word exercise because I think it conjures up a lot of anxiety. Oh, God, exactly. I mean, I think people just think they've got to kind of buy Lycra and join a gym and be intimidated on a daily basis. So, you know, it's really just about thinking, encouraging people to think about movement, physical activity, and you know, gardening, housework, all those things, they all count. They all add in my eyes. You know, it's not about doing a specific sport or activity.
Right.
Sometimes it's just the things that we do, and just about breaking up your periods of being sedentary, because actually that's the kind of my bone of contention with everybody, really, is we spend far too much time sitting and on screens, and hasn't helped either. But in terms of how and why movement and exercise, you know, we've talked about the fact that it can lessen your symptoms and the side effects, the consequences of treatment, and also, you know, the consequences of living with cancer and how it can make you feel. But in terms of, you know, the other reasons to stay well is, you know, obviously we need every other part of the body needs to work as well. So it's not just about the cancer, it's about keeping the heart strong, the lungs healthy and strong, making sure your bones are strong. And we know that that's such a big problem with the treatment in terms of deteriorating bone health. So, you know, making sure that the muscles stay strong. You know, patients lose so much of their muscle mass. You know, that kind of ratio of body fat to muscle mass can change, you know, hugely during treatment, and particularly for people still living with cancer. So, you know, there's all these things can be buffered and bolstered by strength exercises, by aerobic exercises, by stretching on a daily basis, breathing. I mean, I could go on for hours, Robin, about the benefits of just deep abdominal breathing, you know, how much that can improve your lung capacity, lower your heart rate, lower your blood pressure, you know, it helps to switch off the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. You know, it's that, you know, there's so many benefits just from literally breathing deeply for 10 or 15 minutes a day. So there's lots of small things that everybody can do. So it's not just about pumping the iron, as you said, and, you know, hitting the tarmac and having to pant and feel absolutely ghastly for 5 kilometres. It's not about that at all. It's about finding the right exercise that's suitable for you, that's suitable for where you happen to be in that cancer pathway with whatever things are going on for you at that time, whatever limitations you have, and making sure it's safe and it's feasible. And the benefits that you will then take on board within the body and within the mind as well can be quite significant.
So it's all about getting in the right direction in the first place. Okay.
I think that's really, really key. And I know that's often what people really struggle with. And I get people who contact me from Manchester, from Scotland, from, you know, far, far away, because they just don't know how to get started and what is safe. And, you know, and often people are told, oh, you mustn't do that because you mustn't do that because your risk of a fracture. And the minute people hear that, that's it.
It's
a red line under it. And people stop. Absolutely. So, you know, that would terrify me. So often that just closes the door for many people in terms of exercise and movement, when in fact, actually, providing you right guidance from a physiotherapist or from someone with expertise, then, you know, there are still lots of things that you can do to minimise your risk, but to maintain your strength and your stamina. So I think it really is about finding the right person, getting the right advice, and then, you know, finding whatever's suitable for you. So whether that's working with somebody one-to-one, whether it's joining a group, because often those are environments people find safer and more supportive. And, you know, Macmillan, again, they're a very good resource for that. So they can help, you know, the centres are really good at trying to help guide and signpost you to things in your area. So generally, I mean, everyone has a Macmillan centre locally. So it's a really good place to tap into in terms of being able to find out what might be available in your local area. Obviously, Google, there's lots of people out there. We're a bit of a rare breed, but there are people like myself out there offering the kind of service that I do, who've been trained. There's lots of physiotherapists now that specialise in oncology. So it's just trying to find people, but I do appreciate it can be very difficult, particularly when you maybe don't live in a major city as well.
Okay, so I'd like to just step back a tiny bit now. You've mentioned a couple of times about you've actually sort of highlighted people living with cancer, and I just want to talk a little bit more about that, because the whole picture of cancer is moving, I'm very glad to say, fairly rapidly away from the cancer equals you either kill it or it kills you, you know, that sort of picture of cancer, to one where actually cancer can become a manageable disease and one you can live with for quite prolonged periods of time, and something we could get better and better at knowing how to extend as well. So I think this is an area you're a little bit passionate about, is actually the potential for exercise for people who they're living with cancer.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think cancer is a chronic disease now. And as I've mentioned already, you know, people are able to now sometimes live quite long periods of time, often on a maintenance treatment, often not, depending on obviously the individual and their diagnosis. But I think it's, when I think about cancer rehabilitation, which is what I do, it's a process that assists a person with a cancer diagnosis, regardless of where that is. And it's about helping them to obtain what I consider to be optimal physical, social, psychological functioning, really, regardless of where you are. I think, you know, that for now, people who are living with advanced cancer, we can't limit our horizons, because I think it's so important that these individuals have exactly the same accessibility and advice around exercise, around nutrition, around symptom control, because these people are living for longer periods of time, so they need to stay as well as possible and to make sure that their quality of life is as optimal as it possibly can be. And so I think it really does demand a very comprehensive approach from a number of professionals, really, in order to support patients through what might be an advanced stage. So I think it's very important that obviously there's people like myself around, but I think it's super important that healthcare professionals start to play a more integral role, really, through education and supporting patients as to the benefits of eating well and moving well. So I think, you know, hopefully, what I hope, Robin, for the future is that we see more development in this area, so that there's more programs available for everybody, not just people within survivorship, but for everybody, really, that are led by, you know, knowledgeable professionals and supported by the professionals as well. So I think this just, you know, I think I mentioned this at the very beginning, there just needs to be a routine. It needs to be part of the routine, much like you mentioned about the little bits of press that was around this last week. It's just about healthcare professionals routinely inquiring about patients' activity levels, as much as they do about how are they feeling and their symptoms and how's their pain. So it's making sure that we inquire just as much about people's activity levels, because then, you know, we can think about ways in which we can improve physical and emotional functioning. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're all, you know, trying very much to lead towards more health-related quality of life at the end of the day. And I think movement and exercise is absolutely key there, up there with nutrition, of course, but, you know, really super, super important.
Right. Well, it's interesting, you and I would both see those two things, nutrition and exercise, as right up there as two extremely important areas. It's been quite a surprise to me within the last few years how exercise has suddenly come out of, you know, nowhere in a way. People used to get told to stay in bed, you know, 5 years ago. And so it's a completely sort of new kid on the block in a way, in terms of something you can do to help yourself. But it's also interesting in as much as it is one of the non-drug, non-pharmaceutical approaches, just like nutrition, but it hasn't really had the same kind of opposition, if you like. It's been more welcomed than anything to do with nutrition, which is still largely seen as just you must stop cancer patients losing weight, and that's about it. You know, you and I know that a nutritional program can be absolutely vital to the length and the quality of somebody's life. But I find it quite interesting that exercise has come along and sort of leapt in there in a way that nutrition hasn't managed to at all yet, really. Except, you know, if you go abroad, as you say, in America, they will actually have nutritionists as part of an integrative cancer center team, which is marvelous, you know, along with the exercise professionals, really maximizing the potential for sort of lifestyle medicine to help everybody. But in this country, I'm hoping it's a bit of a sort of Trojan horse, you know, it's getting in there where other approaches have failed to make any impression, and demonstrating that things that aren't drugs can actually really make a big difference to people.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I think I've definitely seen, you know, in the last 5 years, actually, there's been a real shift, I mean, for exercise. It took a while, definitely took a while, but, you know, I don't get too many people shaking their head at me anymore.
Right, good.
Because actually, you know, now people are starting to actually, particularly some healthcare professionals, they think, gosh, actually, yes, that does work. They do feel better and they are stronger and they're able to come in for their treatment rather than have to cancel. With regards to nutrition, I pretty much everybody that I do see, I always try and recommend that they seek the advice of a nutritional therapist. As to whether they do or not, it's very individual. Yeah. But most of the people I work with actually do. Sometimes it can take quite a while, and often it's because people will say, well, actually, I eat really well. I've always eaten really, really healthily. And so then you'll sit down and say, okay, well, let me know what you eat. Just give me an idea of what you eat. And actually, they think they eat quite healthy. When in fact, there's probably a few things in there that that could do with being removed from the diet. So it's very much that perception of what people think is kind of right to eat, not right to eat.
Well, absolutely. There's so much propaganda around food, isn't there, as to what healthy food is. You know, there's, you know, flipping old junk food manufacturers are really jumping on the healthy message now to sell absolute crap as being great, you know. And it's very difficult for people to really know what is good. But
yes, absolutely. It's a very, it's really tricky area. And I think if you start to kind of Google bits and pieces, you'll be in even more of a kind of minefield, really. You know, my advice to people is don't do that. Just and I will help to signpost people towards healthcare professionals, or at least books. There's some very good books out there. Obviously, Cancer Revolution being one of them, but there's some great resources out there in terms of getting people thinking. Because sometimes it's just about having to get people thinking about what they eat and maybe what they need to eradicate from their diets. And often there's so many, I mean, people that I get referred to, nutritionists, you know, often they come back and they say, oh my gosh, I've got all these things that I've got to now kind of add in and take and what have you. And it can be a little bit overwhelming to begin with. But actually, you know, as the weeks and the months tick by, I'm not surprised when people come back and say, God, I feel great, actually. You know, it was a real shift and a real change in my attitude and my approach towards my food, my diet. But, you know, they really start to feel the benefits a little bit further down the line once these changes have taken place. And that just marries in so well with the movement as well. And I think, you know, if you're going to do the exercise, you're going to do the movement, you've got to make sure that you're getting the right nutrients into your body as well. So that these two approaches towards, you know, improving your well-being can really work together and really make fire together in the body and give you the best possible outcome, really. I said, you know, I often have people say, well, I did my hour of exercise today and then I sat down and I had a fantastic meal and I had this, that and the other, and I'm like, what? That probably wasn't the best thing to do. You know, you don't want to undo all the good work that you've done. But I think in terms of nutrition being up there with physical activity, I'd like to think it's not going to be long, Robin, but I think maybe, you know, we need to... be great if Macmillan led the way with that one as well.
Wouldn't it? Yes.
Wouldn't it?
Well, look, you know, we have, Professor Thomas gives every single one of his patients a lifestyle consultation where he talks about their diet and he talks about their exercise. And, I mean, you know, God, if we only just get that happening commonly in this country, the difference would be enormous, I think.
Yeah. As I said, I think it's about, you know, exactly, I think... Just inquiring, just having that inquiring moment with your patients about how are you moving, what are you doing, for how long, and what are you eating, what are you drinking, what are you, you know, just those periods of inquiry that are very intimate around that consultation period, you know, when you're going in and just checking in with your nurse specialist or you're checking in with your consultant or member of the team, the multidisciplinary team, just so those things are raised, those things are actually up there as high as prescribing the chemotherapy or prescribing the radiotherapy. So I hope that it won't be long before those things are just as important. They're up there on those charts.
We're going to keep pushing, you know, it'll
keep
happen.
Pushing.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Absolutely. It's a matter of how soon we can get it to happen.
Yeah.
So, look, you mentioned how side effects can be affected by exercise. You talked about fatigue particularly, which is, of course, the number one side effect that people complain about. A couple of other specifics I'd be interested to hear a quick word on would be lymphedema. Has got anything to add there from the exercise front?
Yes, absolutely. Lymphedema, again, historically, you know, talking quite a few years ago now, people were always encouraged to really not move.
Yes.
Whether you, yes, if you're, if one of, if you had an arm at risk or a leg, really just to not really move, not weight bear on it, not carry anything heavy. And, you know, now again, hopefully, well, it, definitely things are changing. There's been a real shift towards lymphedema. And I think it was just, it was largely down to people just not really knowing, not really knowing what the outcome might be if people did exercise. So, so I think by way of caution, and myself included, back in my nursing days, it was very much, slowly, slowly, gently, gently, and try not to use that particular arm. And we know that if you don't use a particular part of your body, you can end up with all sorts of problems.
Right.
So now, for patients who have had lymph nodes removed or they've had radiation to the area as well, they are at risk of developing lymphedema. And for those of you that don't know what lymphedema is, it's an accumulation of fluid in a part of the body, and it's very difficult to reverse, and most of the time actually not possible. So patients are often left with this swelling within the area, in the arm or the chest or the shoulder or the neck or the leg, depending on where the treatment has occurred. So now, thankfully, there's much more of a support and guidance to actually people returning to activities. But what's important is that, again, people are guided by the right professionals, because it's very much about building up your exercise and your strength very slowly and very, very gradually. So that if there are any changes or there are any unusual reactions to movement or exercise, that you can respond to them and you haven't gone in too quickly. So so my advice for patients is always give yourself some time to heal, and then lots of deep breathing, because that's how the lymphatic fluid moves around the body. It's not pumped by the heart. So deep breathing is a fantastic way to get the lymphatic system moving. Lots of stretching. So again, yoga, Pilates, things like that can be great, but be very, obviously be very mindful on too much weight bearing through the area. And just developing strength in the area of the body again. So whether it's the leg or the arm, you know, to build up very, very slowly and very gradually. And, you know, if you look at some of the studies that were done, Cornea, who I mentioned earlier, they did some studies on exercise and lymphedema, particularly with breast cancer patients, some years ago. And they had patients, dragon boat racing, that was it. I don't know if you've heard of dragon boat racing.
I have.
It's a bit like rowing in a big boat, yeah. Very positive results there. So you know, really now people say there's no, you know, people want to return to what they were doing before. That's, you know, it's not unattainable, unachievable, but they will. There is still some hesitancy about certain types of things, sports, though. So again, if I see patients who want to do lots of yoga, or perhaps they golf or they play tennis with that particular arm, again, it's very dominant movement on one side of the body. So patients do have to be very, very, very careful, and again, building up very, very slowly, very gradually. Because it's not just movement or exercise, Robin, that can trigger lymphedema. There's lots of other things that can trigger it. I mean, obviously, treatment, scar tissue from radiotherapy and surgery, is one of the biggest problems that can cause lymphedema, because it blocks, you know, that lovely movement of fluids and damages, you know, creates scar tissue. So, you know, right down to somebody falling and bumping their arm, that can trigger, unfortunately, lymphedema. Getting a mosquito bite that you then scratch and gets infected, that can trigger lymphedema. So it's not just about exercise and movement. being a trigger for lymphedema. There's various other things that unfortunately can happen for patients that can cause this response. And my feelings are is that, you know, building the strength and the stamina in the body is really very important. A muscular contraction, again, helps to move your lymphatic fluid.
Right. Okay. One other sort of side effect which a lot of people suffer from is peripheral neuropathy. I don't know if exercise has got anything to offer there, but if it does, maybe you could explain what peripheral neuropathy is and say how it can help.
Of course. Peripheral neuropathy obviously tends to happen in the peripherals, hands and feet, toes, fingers, soles of the feet, palms of the hand, just damage to the nerve endings caused by treatments, unfortunately. And sometimes, you know, they resolve quite quickly, but other times it can take some time, actually. I've worked with many patients over the years where it can still be quite an ongoing consequence from treatment, actually, and takes some time to recover. And for some people, they're often left with some degree of neuropathy, whether it's in the hands and the feet. Obviously, this can make exercise quite difficult, because what's important, particularly obviously if it's in the feet, well, hands as well, really, if you're lifting things and holding things, is just in terms of balance and in terms of having that strength in your hands to grip something. So safety is always a bit of a tricky one for people moving around and exercising. So again, I just urge patients to choose a mode of activity that's going to make sure they're safe. So if walking is tricky, then you can use a bicycle where you're going to be safe and sitting on something. So it's just, again, just making sure that you select an exercise that's appropriate for perhaps how severe the neuropathy might be. Exercise can help, that's for sure. I have seen improvements in patients that have come to me with quite marked neuropathy. There's definite benefits for exercising with neuropathy. But again, it's sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think in terms of it stopping you from exercising, it shouldn't. I think the benefits of being able to exercise and gain strength and, you know, helping with all the other things that are going on in the body, that's more important. So it's just, I would always encourage patients just to choose something where they're safe or have someone with them. So if they do want to go out for a walk, that they've got a buddy with them to support them. But to kind of not exercise because of the neuropathy, it just means that you don't get all the other benefits. Right. So I wouldn't deter patients from exercising. I mean, I did work with a lady a while ago who had very, very marked neuropathy. And so we just, you know, we would select exercises that she could do, which didn't mean a huge amount of weight bearing through her feet, because it was very painful for her. It can be very painful. And obviously there's that loss of sensation as well. So it's, you know, balance is a big problem. So, it's just about being a bit more creative, Robin. Right. And finding ways in which you can still get the body to move and the heart rate to increase without placing any added risk, really.
Okay, well, look, we're just about out of time. So maybe a quick roundup of just where to go to find this kind of thing. You've already mentioned the Macmillan Centres. How do people find people like you? Is it a matter of just doing a Google search? And if they are doing that, what are they going to search for?
Yeah, I mean, I know if you Google search me, if you just put in cancer and exercise, I think I pop right to the top at the moment.
Excellent.
It's worth Googling because, as I say, there's more of an emerging body of practitioners like myself coming out, thanks to the development of the cancer rehabilitation courses that came about off the back of the Move More report, really. So there's probably, where are we now, 2016, there's a good kind of 6 years' worth of students now that have gone through. And these courses are part, you know, they're carried out all over the country. So So there's more folk like myself out there. So sometimes if just purely searching, you know, cancer exercise specialists or cancer and exercise, again, going to your local Macmillan Centre, they can help signpost you towards projects that are maybe perhaps going on locally.
Is there a particular qualification that you would look out for?
Yes, absolutely. Ideally, you want someone who's got what they call a level 4 cancer rehabilitation physical activity, what they call a REP. So it's a Register of Exercise Professional qualification. So you're looking for that level 4 status specifically around cancer rehab. And there's a organisation called CAN Rehab who put out a lot of courses over the years. So they it's always worth perhaps going to them to find out whether they've got a list of people who might be practicing around the country. Sometimes it's worth going to charities that are of your specific cancer. So whether that's breast or colon, there's sometimes some good local charities set up in regional areas, and often they have a very good connections as well with certain individual practitioners, or whether they have courses that run off their centres or specifically within their charity. Again, not to be missed as well, is as I mentioned earlier, the hospices around the country have got fantastic outpatient facilities, many of them, and they're now, you know, offering gym sessions, depending, of course, you know, the services and the facilities that they have within the hospice. Often there are, there's gym sessions, or there's group classes as well. So you know, it's definitely worth exploring those options.
Out of interest, do you want to just quickly say what you do, what you offer?
I offer a bit of everything, really. I offer one-to-one sessions. I'm based in North London, in Crouch End. So I will see people for one-to-ones. I also do quite a bespoke service where I see people at home as well, Robin. So for those people who can't make it to where I'm based at a medical practice, I will travel to see them. Again, it depends on kind of time and my availability, but I do try to go and see as many patients as I can. For those who are either on treatment and not well enough to travel, or for those people that, you know, travel is just not possible. So perhaps, you know, symptoms are just too overwhelming, or perhaps, you know, as I say, the strength and the stamina to actually come out and see me. So I see quite a lot of patients in the community, and I also run a couple of classes in the week as well. And I do some Nordic walking as well, groups. So I offer a bit of everything, really. So whether right. people want to see me physically or within a group setting, indoors or outdoors. So I always like to think that there's something that I can offer everybody.
Great. All right. Well, your enthusiasm for exercise to help people with cancer exudes out of every pore. It's been really great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
That's all right.
And thanks so much for being a great supporter of Yes to Life as well. Really appreciate it.
Oh, yes, I will be a continued supporter, and you can ask me anytime. I could talk about exercise forever. But it's, you know, I don't want to talk about exercise. I just want to talk about people, you know, just moving. Movement matters. And making sure that it's accessible so that everyone gets to do it. And that's what's you know, that's the goal, really. That's what should be the goal.
All right, thank you, Lizzie.
You're very welcome, Robin. Thanks for calling.
It's always great to talk to Lizzie. She's so passionate about her work and about helping people. For links to resources mentioned in today's show, go to the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. Click Media Centre in the left-hand sidebar, then choose UK Health Radio. This is your last chance to grab a ticket for the Yes to Life annual conference in London, Charging Down the Wrong Path, an investigation into cancer as a metabolic epigenetic disease, headlining American researcher and writer Travis Christofferson, author of Tripping Over the Truth. Go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, and click the link on the homepage. Next week I shall be talking about a particular form of exercise, yoga, with inspirational teacher Neil Patel. I hope you'll be able to join me again. Goodbye.